Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of the Dissenter. I'm your host, as always, Ricardo Lopes, and today I'm joined by Dr. Vibeke Blydor. She's professor of psychology at the University of Zurich in Switzerland. She examines the conditions, mechanisms, and consequences of personality change, and today we're going to talk a bit about that. So, Dr. Blydor, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. Thanks.
So before we get into personality change specifically, I think it would be best for us to understand a little bit how you approach personality in your own work. So do you apply any particular personality inventory, like the Big Five or another one? How do you do it?
Yeah, this is a good question. The measurement is really important before we get to how we measure change. That's true. The Big Five are actually not so much a particular inventory. In fact, there are actually several questionnaires to assess the Big Five, but you're right that I use the Big Five in my work. The Big Five are more a structural model of personality. And it is a really handy model because it allows us to boil down the hundreds of or thousands of trait terms that we could possibly use to describe individual differences. It boils it down to five broad trait domains. And these trait domains can be used to describe individual differences in personality quite comprehensively. If you don't mind, I'd like to maybe talk about them a little bit because I imagine we're going to talk about them a little more. One acronym that's really useful to remember the Big Five is OCEAN. OCEAN refers to O for openness to experience. I guess that's perhaps even self-explanatory. People differ in the degree to which they are curious about things, intellectually interested, imaginative. This trait really refers also to open-mindedness, and some people score higher or lower on this trait. Well, then the C in OCEAN is conscientiousness, and that describes how orderly, dutiful, punctual, and well-organized people are, whereas there's people who score lower on this trait, maybe a little less organized and maybe a little more laid back, perhaps. And then the E in OCEAN is for extroversion. Many people know this trait domain. Extroverted people are outgoing, social, like parties, have lots of friends, and introverted people actually maybe like a book better than a party and staying at home and are a little more, well, happy when they are by themselves, perhaps. And then where are we? The E, and then we are with the A in the OCEAN. That's for agreeableness, and agreeable people are compassionate and polite, and they like it when things are like when there's harmony and people get along. And people low on agreeableness are actually not afraid also to have a fight maybe and an argument and are, yeah, disagreeable. And then we are with the N already, right? Did I miss it?
Yes, no, it's the end now.
Yeah, with the N is for neuroticism. And neuroticism is the one pole, and people who are neurotic are typically a little stressed when they or experience negative affect when they're stressed. They worry a lot, they're a little anxious. People who are emotionally stable are pretty calm and fairly resilient towards stress. So these are five traits that are really handy to describe your personality, at least in broad strokes. And we use this model quite a lot. Yeah.
And so those are the five big traits, and then you also have other subdivisions, right? Like aspects, facets, if I'm not mistaken. Is there anything important for people to know here in this conversation, since we're going to talk about personality change, about the way the Big Five are structured?
Yeah, this is a really important question, and I think it's if you think about personality and the structure of it, you can think about a hierarchical model with very broad traits at the highest level. So perhaps even the broadest trait, just one trait, could be: are you a person who is socially valued or not valued by others, like a good or a bad person? To really break it down simply. And then the Big Five are sort of at a mid-level, at a very convenient level to enter the hierarchy, but then it's true that there are lower order traits that we can use to get a more fine-grained description of a person. And these traits can be very useful if we think about a certain context, for example. Think about maybe the school context, where perhaps you want to know more than, is this person open to experience? Perhaps you want to know, is this kid intellectually interested, curious? Is that kid imaginative or not? And you could even break it down, well, at an even lower level. And so under each of these five trait domains, you could think about multiple facets to get a more fine-grained description. I also want to say that these trait models are not so much the last word on personality. It's not that we capture every way in which people differ with the big five, right? Another trait that I'm interested in that is really not that well captured by the big five is self-esteem. I study self-esteem a lot, and that describes how much you like and accept yourself as a person, for example. So there are also others, but the big five, just to be clear, are really handy because they, over the past 60 years, really allowed personality psychology to have a research program that is sort of organized among these big five domains, allowed researchers to communicate with each other and to connect research in different subdomains of the discipline. So it's a really useful model.
Mm-hmm. So before getting into personality change, perhaps one of the first questions people would ask is if personality traits are heritable, or if they are influenced, or if they are the result of environmental influences, for example. So are they heritable?
Yes, I think this is one thing we don't have to be timid about in our discipline in social science. I think we can say yes, all individual differences are heritable to a certain degree. There's no trait that people, humans, differ on that is not heritable. And that sounds kind of extreme, but it's really important to understand what heritability means in order to interpret this, because I understand that heritability is often misinterpreted. So I just want to be very clear that individual differences in a trait, or it's the proportion of individual differences in a trait that can be explained by individual differences in genes. It does therefore refer to populations and traits, not to individuals. So knowing the heritability of a trait doesn't tell me anything about the genetic influences like in a particular person. That's very important to understand. It also doesn't tell me anything about the changeability of a trait. So the heritable, they can very well be changed. And it also doesn't tell me anything about what the heritability would be like in 100 years, for example. So heritability is not a stable entity or a feature of a trait. It is really dependent on the population in which it is measured. This is really important to understand. But right now, one can say that the heritability of the big five ranges, depending on the study and the population, actually, I would say between 30% and 50%. So yeah, roughly half of the variants and traits can be explained by genetic influences. That also, of course, means by a conclusion that the other half can be explained by environmental influences. So the environment also plays an important role. And what also, of course, plays an important role is the interaction between genes and environment, because these effects don't happen in a vacuum. It is much more the case that certain people with certain genetic predispositions enter the environment or a different environment than people with other genetic predispositions. And these environments have then different effects depending on their genetic makeup.
Mm-hmm. And within the environment, we have, I mean, if we go along the literature on behavioral genetics, we have the shared and the non-shared environment, correct? I mean, is there a difference here in terms of the percentage of variability that is explained by one or the other?
Well, one thing I know is that you talked to Matt McGough very early on in your career. So I know he's the expert. He's one of the experts in this area. And he probably very likely told you that the shared environment plays little, like no role really in personality traits. It is non-shared environmental influences. And what does that mean? It means that within families, it is really the environments that make siblings more different from each other that matter, not so much things that would make people who share genes similar to each other. So everything that we can say is similar across people who grow up in the same family and share genes can be explained by the shared genes. Like shared environmental influences are not important for personality traits.
And what is the earliest stage where it's possible to study personality traits? When do personality traits come online, or we are able to really see their manifestation in infants' behavior, for example?
Yeah, I think if you ask parents, they will tell you, what do you mean? We can observe the personalities of our kids. Like we could see that very early on. And I think many parents will also tell you that there's something stable there. From many kids who will be sort of calm and regular when they're even only a couple of months old, to them very maybe emotionally stable people when they're adults. But the problem is that we are not very good at measuring that. So we still have sort of two disciplines of childhood temperament research and adult personality trait research that is only loosely connected. In my taste, it should be better connected. But the problem is, of course, that I have a toddler, and I'm happy if he eats with a spoon. I can certainly not give him a self-report personality questionnaire and ask him, so what are you like as a person? That doesn't work, of course. And so even other report methods, you would think, okay, why don't you ask them parents or perhaps kindergarten teachers? That has their own limitations, because of course we as parents or our parents use their own models and ideas of personality, and it doesn't mean that there's no validity to it, but it's very difficult to assess these personality differences. And even if we could use these questionnaires, the question is, can we even compare the measures, right? Is a 3-year-old's curiosity comparable to a 25-year-old's curiosity, or do we need different indicators there? So all of this is to say that personality is visible and noticeable right away, and there's also some stability there from very early childhood on to old age even. But to really measure it continuously and have models that connect from early childhood to adulthood is very difficult. So in my own research, I typically start at age 16, really, with a few exceptions of younger samples. But this has measurement reasons, and I should also say ethical reasons, because I can ask informed consent from 16-year-olds or 18-year-olds, and not so much from younger kids.
By the way, since you start studying people around that age, when we talked about heritability, there's perhaps a question that would be interesting to get into here. Do you know if the heritability of personality traits, as happens with other aspects of psychology, like, for example, intelligence, IQ, also increases with age? Or is that something that doesn't happen?
Yeah, colleagues of mine, Daniel Briley and Elliot Tucker Drop, have done several meta-analyses on this topic, and they have found, interestingly enough, that actually the trends are a bit different for personality traits compared to intelligence as measured with IQ tests or cognitive ability tests. It seems as if heritability or the genetic influence doesn't increase across the lifespan, what increases are the non-shared environmental influences. So it looks like the environmental influence, actually, the relative proportion increases across the lifespan and is lower in childhood than later on in middle and late adulthood.
So getting into the main topic of our conversation today, does personality change?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it does. personality traits change for most people, really. Some aspects of their personality will change across the lifespan. Some of these changes might actually be drastic, at least when you look at these changes across a lifespan, right? Some of these changes are normative. That means that many people undergo them and age graded. Other changes might be non-normative, meaning these might be really connected to your own individual experiences. And some of these changes might be even purposeful and following an intervention.
And when we're talking here about changes and looking at the structure of personality when it comes to the big five, do they occur at what levels exactly? At the level of traits, facets, or what exactly?
We can observe changes actually at all levels of the hierarchy. So we have studied changes in the big five quite a bit, and we find changes in the big five across the lifespan. I guess we will talk a little bit perhaps more about the specific changes, and also at the level of facets. And indeed, it seems as if under certain circumstances, facets which are a little narrow, right, might be a little more malleable also. And we see perhaps a lot more change even the further down we go the trait hierarchy.
So are there, for example, traits, facets that are more plastic than others or more changeable, let's say, than others?
Yeah. So this is a question that we thought would be the case. And we thought, for example, that those changes, those traits that we see, these normative changes for, that they are perhaps more malleable than actually traits that seem a little more stable across the lifespan. But we recently conducted a meta-analysis in which we tested whether there are changes across the big five domains, and it didn't look like it. So these differences are very small. We do find small but significant differences between domain level traits and these narrow facet level traits, which seem to be more malleable, even when accounting for differences in reliability.
And talking about individual differences, are there individual differences in how personality is plastic or malleable, or, for example, for particular traits, facets, or whatever?
Yeah. This is another great question. And here the answer is yes. And I would say this is probably the hottest topic in our field. I mean, I study individual differences. This is my job, and so this is really the one thing about personality change that I'm most interested in, when and why people differ in their personality change trajectories. Because like I said, there are some normative changes that most people undergo, fine. But what I'm really interested in is, why do some people change more than others? Why are certain people maybe more reactive to certain life events than others? And it is an interesting, It's been a really interesting journey, because it is really difficult for us to pin down the individual factors that can explain these individual differences in change. It's been really difficult. For example, we don't find any differences between men and women, let's say. There's very little evidence for gender differences. We do find differences across age groups. Young adults, for example, tend to change more than older adults. And we're also trying to figure out why some people change following life events and others don't. And it seems that those people who think that life events really matter to them change more than others. But there's not like a set of factors that would make you more resilient to or more vulnerable to personality change that I could really list now.
So, talking about the patterns that we see across different people, are there really patterns in how personality changes across the lifespan? I mean, as people get older, are there certain traits that tend to go higher or down?
We just recently published a meta-analysis, and this is a meta-analysis that includes another meta-analysis. So this is the second meta-analysis on this topic, and we really tried to integrate the literature on this question. And we did this because you need many studies to truly answer the questions about lifespan trends, right? Because otherwise you would have to have a longitudinal sample that you follow from birth to death, and that should be representative of perhaps even the world population. Because that doesn't exist, we used meta-analytic techniques. And in doing this, we found that there are fairly well-established trends by now, namely that most people's and traits that indicate psychological maturity, I would say, during young adulthood. And this is most people increase in emotional stability, in conscientiousness, and to a certain level also agreeableness in young adulthood. And this trend has been often referred to as the maturity principle of personality development, meaning that most people seem to mature as they grow up. Because being conscientious, agreeable, and also emotionally stable is considered a fairly healthy and mature personality profile. The trends for openness to experience and extroversion are a little less clear. It seems that people tend to increase in openness as they leave school. And or at the peak, really, most especially for those who go to college, there seem to be an increase in openness. With extroversion, it's really fairly stable across the lifespan.
So as people move to adulthood, they tend to increase their conscientiousness, their agreeableness, and reduce their neuroticism. Is that it?
Right. But again, these are the average effects, meaning there's a lot of individual differences and not everyone does that. But if you had to make a bet and you had to put money on those trajectories, that's where you put your money on, because that's the average trend that we see.
And this has been cross-culturally validated or not?
Well, I think I wouldn't go that far to say cross-culturally validated, because in the social science, and psychology is not an exception there, we are not very good at studying samples that are not Western educated, industrialized, rich, democratic samples. But there are some attempts in which these trends, or in there have been some attempts in which these trends have been studied in other cultures. For example, we did a cross-sectional study, I should say, so not a longitudinal study, in which we compared age groups from 62 different countries in a sample of roughly a million participants, actually, and we found that in all of these countries, like in Argentina, in Iran, in the Netherlands, in Finland, but also in Zimbabwe, the average 40-year-old scores higher in emotional stability, agreeableness, and conscientiousness than the average 16-year-old. So there's really these trends, at least in the cross-sectional data, seem fairly cross-culturally generalizable here.
Are there also changes when people transition into motherhood or fatherhood?
That's what we thought. In fact, I spent good amount of time on studying this question, because we thought, okay, what drives these trends of personality maturation? And we thought, okay, it looks like there must be certain demands. I mean, we know that there may be genetic effects on personality change, right? So there might be something like a genetic maturation program that makes it so while we grow up, we are not growing to our adult body height, but maybe we're also growing up to our adult personality profile. So there's a genetic effect, but then we know that there's environmental effects too. And we thought maybe it's in young adulthood, it's those life transitions that require us to grow up and be a mature person. And one of those life transitions that really seem to require us to be an adult is parenthood, right? So we thought, okay, parents are probably, they are needed to be emotionally stable. They need to be more conscientious than they've been previously, and they need to be agreeable. That's sort of, that comes with the role, right? And we thought, if this is true, then we would expect that people who are parents score higher in these traits than people who aren't parents. And we would even see that people who go through this transition before and after parenthood would increase in these traits. And I can tell you, we tested this left and right in nationally representative data from thousands of participants with really rigorous models. And there's very little evidence that parenthood has an effect on personality trait change, which is really remarkable to us, because we thought, wait a minute, this sort of all the life events that you can think of, this should be one that really matters. But we found actually very little evidence that it matters for the big five. It does matter for your self-esteem, especially if you are a mother, not so much for fathers, but for mothers it matters. And it's not always in the best sense, I should say, for your self-esteem, but it doesn't seem to affect the big five.
So if there are personality traits that are more suited for someone to be a mother or a father, people already have those traits before they become one.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's correct that you can use the big five to predict perhaps who becomes a father or a mother in young adults, for example. People who are more agreeable, more conscientious, less open, are more and more emotionally stable, more likely to have a kid compared to control groups who are otherwise similar. And also people who are higher in self-esteem actually are more likely to become parents. But then for mothers, it looks like during pregnancy and also after childbirth, there's a dip in self-esteem. So it seems like there's maybe a trend that we gain the self-esteem to have a child, but then having one is really stressful and maybe not so good for our self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was just wondering, since there are these studies out there, I'm not sure to what extent they're valid or not, but people sometimes talk a lot about, or recently, about the changes in the brain of women that are pregnant and then after they give birth that occur. I mean, I was just wondering if that could also imply some changes at the level of personality traits or not, or if it's just them feeling more attached to the infant or something like that.
Yeah, of course, my research is restricted to questionnaires in this domain, I should say, and I can only speak to that. And I'm also not saying that it doesn't mean your personality doesn't change at all, but not so much at the level of self-reported trait change. And I can also tell you what my guess is why we don't find it. I mean, there's a chance that really nothing's going on. We're all the same, parenthood or not, who cares? Or it could be that, for example, we don't see the expected increases in trait conscientiousness because people have already increased before the birth of the child. Because you think, okay, because most, at least in my studies, even among a study of 85,000 mothers from Norway that we did, almost all pregnancies were planned. There was just a small amount of unplanned pregnancy, so people seem to mostly decide about this right now in Western societies and in the samples I studied. And so it could be that the changes happened before the transition to parenthood. It could also be that when you ask parents after the birth of the child if they are well organized, for example, and have good control, and if they're always on time, it could also be that the bar has raised, right? They feel like, actually, no, I'm not, because I'm struggling, even though maybe if you would really have a behavioral measure, they would actually do fairly well and get everything done that they did before, maybe even more. But now, because the bar has been raised, they felt like they're always stressed and maybe not so conscientious. So this could be another reason why we don't see these changes as much as we predicted.
So I'm not sure if you thought about this or not, but since earlier we talked about the transition to adulthood, so for example, if someone as a child when they're an adolescent, would you expect then that the changes we see in the transition to adulthood would occur just later on when that phase comes up?
You mean if the transition to adulthood is really important, or
If the personality changes that we see in the transition to adulthood would still only occur when they reach adulthood, even though they already have a child, for example.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, really. We haven't really tested this along those lines. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Another question, is there a relationship between personality and life goals?
Yeah, there seemed to be an interesting relationship between life goals or motives in general, life motives, right? You can think about personality traits about as if they're like describing what you are like, and motives or life goals, what you want in life, right? So these things go together. And we find, for example, that people who overall strive for goals like power and agency and achievement, for example, appear to be those people who might maybe increase a little more in extroversion and also conscientiousness traits that sort of feed into these goals. Interestingly, though, a study that is not published that yet that I'm working on, in which we used a more fine-grained goal measure. So we not only talked about these broad motives, but we actually talked, do you want intimacy? Do you want to have a family, for example, and a relationship? As one example, we found that those people who continue to strive for intimacy and feel like this is always a way and they always have to strive for it, they actually increase in neuroticism, apologies. So they become more neurotic. So it seems like this is a really stressful thing. If you have a life goal that remains unfulfilled and it's not only a value of yours, but you really want this and you never get to it, that seems to be stressful and seem to make you more neurotic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So still in the domain of personality change, what about daily experiences? Do they change personality?
Yeah, well, I don't know. This is, I mean, ultimately, I would say that all the life events we study also are manifest in daily experiences. So yes, I think the answer must be yes, right? But to what degree one daily experience can change personality, I think I would be more skeptical. I don't think that there is this one event, like you meet someone really important and you feel enlightened, that will change your personality. I do think that frequent daily experiences that sort of change your patterns of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors can actually change pretty bottom up. So most scholars today think about personality change, in fact, as a bottom up process where you change your daily behavior, the way you think, the way you feel, and maybe also the way you think about yourself. And then the trait change follow, and not so much as a, oh, today I decide I think I'm going to be a more conscientious person, so the trait change, and then from that follows all the changes in behaviors and feelings. So this seems not impossible, but less likely. So I do think daily experiences matter, and I think also that this would be a very useful addition to our research on life events and personality change, if we had, for example, daily diaries of mothers who just had a baby to see, okay, how do these people differ and what is happening to those who maybe actually experienced changes in their personality or in their self-esteem? What's different for their daily routines?
Mm-hmm. So one more question about life events, because we've already touched on them several times during our interview when I asked you about the heritability of personality traits, and you told me that in later phases of development, people are more influenced by the non-shared environment, and that includes life events. But then when we talked about personality change and its plasticity, you also mentioned a little bit life events and how perhaps some people are more impacted by them and perhaps more impacted by some uh, by one kind of life events, but not others, something like that. So what is really the impact of life events? I mean, is there something else you would add to what we've already talked about?
Yeah, we talked about motherhood or parenthood mostly, right? There's been a lot of research on life events and personality trait change, and the answer is that we do know that there's something going on. This major life experience seemed to really, at least for some people, create a disruption that leads to changes in their patterns of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that make up personality traits, and some people seem to experience lasting changes. Main effects that I could say this life event leads to this kind of personality change are rare. There are two types of events, or two events, I should say, that have been fairly reliably connected to changes in personality. The first event is the first romantic relationship. That's a life event that for most people matters, especially for young men, not so much for young women, but for young men, that seems to be a really important event. Most boys, so young men, actually, that's like a relief. They increase in self-esteem and they decrease in eroticism or increase in emotional stability. So it really seems like that's a major stressor. Even if people break up a couple of weeks ago, that seems to, after they get together, the first relationship seems to be an important event. The other event that we find effects for fairly consistently, I would say, is the graduation from school and college. There's a lot of research showing that there seemed to be something of entering or leaving school and entering the work world is connected to changes in conscientiousness and in some ways also openness to experience.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it the case that the impact that life events have on people also depends on their personality traits, that people with different personality traits deal with similar life events differently?
That is certainly true, and it's also true that personality traits predict the occurrence of life events. And so if you use personality traits as predictors, that's really helpful, but the changes after, not so much. And personality traits itself, so if you score high or low on a certain trait, doesn't necessarily tell you that much how you change in that personality trait either. So that connection doesn't really exist. What we found, now the study is also not published yet, but we found that in a nationally representative sample where people experience different life events, if we ask them which life event was really important to you, and we only look at those people who said parenthood was really important to me, then we can actually see main effects. For those people who say, oh, that event was really relevant and I think it had an effect on my personality, these people seem to have changed even in the past in their personality along the lines they experienced it. So there must be something that's subjectively also really important to you in order for that life event to change. And I'm not saying that, wait a minute, parenthood must be important for everyone, that's true, but I think for some people, they noticed that it really had a changing effect on their personality also. And it seems that non-psychologists are pretty good at identifying whether this was a life-changing event or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just one example that came to my mind about personality, people score higher or lower on neuroticism, and I would imagine that stressful life events would have more of an impact on someone who scores high than someone who scores low. I mean, I'm not sure if that would translate into personality changes necessarily, but just an example.
Right. And you would think then that those people are also more likely to become even more neurotic, but the truth is that neurotic people are not only reacting to stressful events differently, they also end up in stressful events more often because they perceive even little things more stressful. Mm-hmm. So it's really what is so difficult for us, and I'm not saying that that's not the case, what you said, I'm just saying it's really difficult empirically to tease apart what has the person actually led to this event and what does the event do to the person, because personality typically predicts whether you experience an event or not, and neurotic people are more likely to experience more stressful events and perceive events as more stressful.
Also, and perhaps this is another thing that comes from behavioral genetics, active gene environment correlations. I mean, it's also the case that people, at least when they have the liberty to do so, seek the environments that go more along their personality traits, and perhaps that reinforces them in a way. So, just one last question topic. Can people deliberately change their personality?
I'm going to say yes, but I want to say that there are two, at least two caveats. Maybe I should think about before I just say two. There's two broad sets of caveats. The first is that in order to deliberately change your personality, you must really want to change your personality. Now, this is actually true for many people. Several studies have shown that people actually would be open to changing their personality if offered. People must also think it's possible, so that it is feasible to change their personality, because some people think, my personality is that like plaster, there's nothing I can do anyway, I live with that. So these two things must happen. And then if you go with the model I just told you to, that you change your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors over time, people really have to engage in these new patterns of thoughts, feelings, and behavior, actually over fairly amount of time. So it's like practicing, really. It's like practicing a new trait, right? So if you want to become, let's say, more open to experience, right? Not many people are actually interested in changing this trait. Many people seem to be fine with where they score, but let's say you just want to be more outgoing, or more curious, more open to new things, then you would have to give yourself perhaps challenges and say, okay, I will eat out and try a new dish that I've never had before with ingredients that I don't even know. Tomorrow I will go to a museum, then maybe I learn a new instrument, I read a new book, maybe I read a newspaper that has contradictory views to what my typically are right now. And you really have to engage with these ideas over and over and over again. And the idea is then over time you might actually become more habitual, and over time you might also see yourself who's open to experience, because you are a person who engages in different ideas and perhaps also then are aesthetically interested, more imaginative and curious. Now, this also tells you the limitations here, right? That it is not as easy as some of the self-help books that you might find in the bookstore suggest, where like, be a new person, try the 12-step program that we offer here. This is not as easy as it seems. So to change personality traits, at least what we find, to even have small effects, it requires a lot of practice and work for you to do that. And the existing studies that there are pretty promising. There have been personality interventions, also digital interventions, little apps, game-based apps, for example. They're really interesting. The issue with these is that the studies are fairly short. So most studies that exist on this topic are a couple of months long, and they show that there are effects. But of course, what we really want to know is, are these effects sustainable? Do we also see these being stable if we assess people again in 2 years ago? And right now we are waiting for those results to come in.
Okay, so Dr. Blythorn, before we go, would you like to tell people where they can find you and your work on the internet?
I know my name is perhaps if you just pronounce it, very difficult to find. I'm a professor of psychology, like you said, at the University of Zurich. So if you Google individual differences and assessment and my last name, you will find me and my team on the internet. And also, I have a Google Scholar page if you're interested in my latest research. That'd be great if you would check that out.
Okay, great. So thank you so much again for taking the time to come on the show, and it's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really impressed for your research on this topic and the way you ask the questions. I know this is really difficult to dive into all these different areas of research. Thank you.
Okay, so let me just finish.
Different areas of research. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for watching this episode until the end. To keep the channel sustainable, I would like to ask you to please visit my Patreon page and consider making a pledge there, starting at $1 per month. You also have links to PayPal. Otherwise, and if you like what I'm doing, please share it, leave a like, and hit the subscription button. The show is brought to you by Enlights, learning and development done differently. Check their website at enlights.com. I would also like to give a huge thank you to my main patrons and PayPal supporters, Karen Litzke and Blanchett Perga, Larson, Lau Guerrero, Francis Fordens, Frederick Sunda, Ricardo Vladimiro, Craig Healy, Adam Castle, Olaf, Alex, Jonathan Wiesel, Jacob Klinkby, Matthew Whittingbird, Arnaud Wolf, Tim Hollis, Eric Alenia, John Connors, Paulina Barron, Philip Force Connolly, Jerry Mueller, Herbert Gintis, Bo Weingard, Rebecca Neuberger, Goldstein, Dan Demetri, Robert Windegar, Rui Inácio, Arthur Coe, Zup, Marco Neves, Colin Holbrook, Susan Pinker, Bernardo Seixas, Pablo Santurbano, Simon Colombo, Jorge Pinha, Phil Kavanagh, Corey Clark, Mark Blythe, Roberto Inguenzo, Mikkel Stormir, Samuel Andreev, Tiago Nunes, Bernard Hugnig, Alexander Dunbauer, Fergal Cussen, Yevhen Bodrenko, Hal Herzog, Don Ross, Jonathan Librand, Oslin Bulut, Nathan Nguyen, Stanton T, Samuel Correa, Eric Hines, Mark Smith, J.W., João Weira, Tom Hummel, David Sloan Wilson, Yasila Dez Araújo, Eden Solon, Romain Roach, Dermiti Grigoriev, Diego Londoño Correa, Tom Roth, Yannick Punter, Adana Rusmani, Nicole Barbaro, Adam Hunt, Pavel Ostasevski, Alec Bach, Catherine and Patrick Tobin, Al Ortiz, Guy Madison, Gary G. Elman, João Linhares, Lida Cosmidis, Simon Fazal, Adrian Yegi, Nick Golden, Paulo Tolentino, João Barbosa, Jules Price, Edward Hall, Edin Brunner, Franca Bortolotti, Gabriel Pons Cortez, Ursula Litzke, Denise Cook, Scott, Zachary Fish, Tim Duffy, Todd Shackelford, and Sunny Smith. My producers is our web, Jim Frank, Lucas Stefaniak, Ian Gilligan, Luis Caetano, Tom Vanag, Dom Curtis Dixon, João Linhares, Benedict Mueller, Vega Guidi, Sardus France, Thomas Trumbull, and Nuno Welder, and my executive producers, Michel Rugieski, Rosie, James Pratt, Matthew Lavender, Sergio Quadriano, and Bogdan Canivet. Thank you for all.